IMRO's 2023 Best Local Original News Programme. The Voice of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes.
And a very good morning to you. If you've just joined us, thank you for sticking with us. If you've been here since 9, an interesting conversation, I think, in the first hour. Much of it dominated by road safety and lots of you texting in. I'll get to some of those right now. Hi, Greg. Great to hear Michael Harrison stating it as it is. Re-road safety, that comes in from Mary C. Hi, Greg. Ask Susan, how many cars does the RSA check at their checkpoints along the road? Would the answer be none when cars account for 90% of road deaths? Greg, ask him why such a significant amount of drivers who are charged with drunk driving never reach court. The fact is, guards still turn a blind eye to the drink drivers depending on their status in a community. Well, that's certainly something worthy of further investigation. Personally, says a listener, in my opinion, I think all passengers in a vehicle with a drunk driver should also be fined and even banned for 6 months for aiding and abetting the driver, who could be occasionally pressured into driving. Just my opinion. And I can see the logic and where that's coming from. How it might be enforced, I'm not sure, but I do understand exactly where you're coming from. Is Michael suggesting the guard should be allowed to access everyone's private information with no checks? No. But what happened before 2018 is that if there were collisions on certain parts of the roads across the county in an anonymous way, that information was then passed on to Donegal County Council, who, and Michael Harrison worked with them, and he said, used that quite effectively to make subtle changes to try and improve road safety. That hasn't happened since 2018. My understanding is it was anonymised, but even so, there were concerns over GDPR. A caller says, why don't Gardaí record driving licence numbers when the person is arrested for drink or drug driving? A caller says, the issue is companies are so afraid of being caught up in court cases for compensation and hence they are unnecessarily over-protective. Why is the data not being handed over to the authorities? What's the reason for it? GDPR is the reason since 2018. But that doesn't mean that was it, fait accompli. What happened was is that people who have authority in this position, be it the Minister for Transport or the Data Protection Commission or whoever it might be, you don't just sit there and go, oh, right, OK, we can't share that information anyway because of GDPR. You look at how they're managing it in other European countries and you do your job and you find out how that hole can be plugged. So just to blame GDPR doesn't tell the full story. Someone obviously didn't pursue it like they have in other countries and said, you know, we need to do something about that. A caller says, we know speed is a big reason for road deaths. A car can speed up to 200 kilometres per hour. Why are the government not asking car manufacturers for speed on cars to be clocked or clamped at 100 kilometres per hour? Just yesterday, Greg, I was nearly run down at a stoplight outside the old Dunn's in Letterkenny. A white SUV just pulled out of a parking space and went through the red light. By sheer luck, I didn't step out. And this has happened to me twice before in Letterkenny at different traffic lights. Shocking how careless people have become. Let me see now. There's a few here on defective concrete. I'll read them. My engineer has rang at least 10 times since I was asked for further information 4 weeks ago. No one will go back to them. Delay tactics, remedial works finished for 11 months now. Another, can you ask if there has been a hold up on the repayments or the payments recently? I've heard payments are being held back and more information asked on all documents recently submitted. I know someone who waited more than 6 weeks on a payment and the contractor is upset at this point. This is being made out to be streamlined and easy, but that's not the case at all. If we mess the contractors around and hold up the payments, the contractors will not want to take on Micah houses going forward. A separate issue, which I wish I had had that text beforehand. So I could have asked Michael, but what we'll do is we'll chase that up separately. At least over 50 process. Time to get Charlie and Niall on the show for an all-round celebration to thank them, says a listener with their tongue firmly implanted into their cheek. While Highland remains a Fianna Fáil radio station, nothing will ever be done to resolve Donegal's problem. All government reps know they'll always get an easy ride on the show. That is someone who I suspect might not listen to the programme regularly because not quite the case. On the deposit return scheme, the fact that I do online shopping like thousands of others who can't travel, I feel that we're being targeted as we're charged the surplus, but we can't return the bottles. We're being charged extra money. I was charged on a pack of bottled water six 2-litre bottles, a total of 65 cents for each packet. Why am I being charged for each bottle when I can't return them on disability and travel grounds? Indeed, and we've mentioned this before, it's a big problem. And if you travel anywhere around Donegal, you'll see the Don's vans out, the Tesco vans out. Lots of people get their shopping delivered to them, some for its convenience, some because they have disability issues and can't travel. But what happens to those people? I mean, ideally, those that deliver take the bottles back, but I imagine that's not going to be practical. It does disadvantage a lot of people. This caller, they're paying extra for their bottles, but they've no way of actually redeeming the deposit. What does someone in that situation do? Good morning to you, Greg. I fell victim to a Revolut scam almost 3 weeks ago. Unfortunately, I lost all my money. Undoubtedly, the most frustrating part of this entire nightmare has been that you cannot speak to anyone directly. It's all through online chat support, of which I've messaged over 20 different agents at this stage. Have any of your listeners had any success in getting their money from Revolut back? As I'm really not confident at this stage. I appreciate your time. That comes in from a listener there. Really, really sorry that you got done on that one. They're trying to speak to a person. The thing now with the online chat, there's already an element of artificial intelligence in that, and that's only going to actually increase over time. It's going to be indistinguishable, if it's not already, whether you're actually speaking to a real person or you're speaking to artificial intelligence that responds like a real person. We're going to see more and more of that. This person wants to engage with a human person over the phone on Revolut. What they're asking at this stage is, A, has anyone been able to do that? And B, have they had any success in having money recouped through Revolut? Let us know, please. Help that listener out. Obviously, they're up to high dough having lost their money. HRB report release states, despite recent closure of pubs, Ireland still has the third highest pubs per head of population ratio in the world. The fact is, Ireland is a nation of heavy drinkers and irresponsible drivers. That's the crux of the high road deaths rate, says that listener. Okay, a decent amount of people from this part of the world have at some stage or other visited Dubai, and if you haven't, you probably know someone who lives there, and you'd know it's known for its arid climate, blistering temperatures. Well, it was battered with torrential rain yesterday, triggering widespread flooding throughout the desert nation. The downpour, which was unforeseen, not only halted the bustling city's usual pace, but also sparked worries the escalating influence and climate change on extreme weather phenomena in that area. And those watching the show across our social media will see some of the footage that we have been sent. Florentina Muldowney is from this part of the world, but out in Dubai. Good morning to you, Florentina. Thanks for your time today.
Good morning. How are you getting on?
Doing fine. Right. A year and a half's worth of rain fell in less than 24 hours. I suppose just rather before we talk about the consequences of it, what was it like actually living through it?
It was very hectic. So yesterday morning, the first kind of bout of rain came, but it just continued. Normally, if there's rain here, you'll find that it can be incredibly heavy, but it'll be a short burst and then it'll clear kind of as soon as it comes. But this time it was more persistent throughout the day, I suppose. And you could see the water just starting to lie straight away. The drainage wouldn't be the best over here because they're not obviously used to getting that that much rain. So the water just lies on the roads and in any kind of areas where the water can lie, it will lie. So the roads became really bad really quick. It got quite scary, I suppose, after a while for sure. But I wasn't too badly affected, thank God. But I know that there was a lot of people stuck. There was a lot of cars abandoned. There's a lot of cars still underwater. It was a crazy day for sure.
Yeah, and I suppose it makes sense that the drainage really isn't up to scratch because they wouldn't expect this level of rain the way it fell. Some referencing climate change, but there's also something that is adopted over there called cloud seeding. Was cloud seeding at all responsible for this deluge?
So apparently, now this is only from what I've read, maybe as much as you'll be able to find as well, but I think it was cloud seeding yesterday as well. Generally, what will happen here, as much as you have the weather forecast, as we would at home, they will be able to pinpoint exactly when the chaos is going to ensue. So like it's much more kind of orchestrated if you'd have it. But yeah, as far as I'm aware, it was cloud seeding yesterday as well. And I suppose it's just something that maybe they can't control how much it will rain when they do that.
So, you know, we watch the traditional weather forecast here, as you'd be very familiar with, and it's, you know, band after band of rain often coming in from the northwest, and we understand how that information is delivered. Like, do they ever talk about planned cloud seeding when forecasting the weather there, or how is that phrased?
It wouldn't really be so much on, like, the weather forecast, I suppose, that we would have at home, but it would be more that on the news outlets, they will say, there's going to be like severe weather on Monday at like 7 a.m. you know, so they can really pinpoint it. I feel like maybe more than we get at home, where, you know, you kind of expect that if it's going to rain, it's probably going to stay rainy. They can kind of pinpoint it a bit more here, but it's more like the news outlets that you would see it on, rather than the weather forecast as we would have a weather guard or whatever at home, you know.
Yeah, because it'd be a bit boring saying today's going to be 35 degrees, tomorrow's going to be 35 degrees, the day after.
Yeah, exactly.
Be 35 degrees. Standing in front of a map that never changes.
It.
Yeah, I can understand. Sounds like a good gig though, if it was going. What is the temperature like there at the moment outside of this extreme weather, Florentina?
It's absolutely gorgeous again today. There's blue skies. I'm just looking out here now. Just one second, I'll check.
Please.
So we are on 26 degrees here today.
All right, okay, it's mild enough. And are you working today, Florentina?
Yeah.
How long have you been over there?
I'm coming on just 2 years here now, but I'm actually off this week because I have people visiting from Ireland, so they must have brought the weather with them.
Of course.
But the salon that I'm working in is closed. It's been closed today and yesterday for the first time, as far as I know, since I've been here anyway. They've never had to close due to the weather, but the road outside the salon is completely underwater.
So, I'm going to ask what you do over there, Florentina, in the salon. Do you mind me asking what you do in the salon?
Yeah, I'm a hairdresser.
Wow. Okay. Because, I mean, obviously, when we have people that move over to Dubai for all the right reasons, of course, the weather and what have you, and how people are treated over there, it is often for, you know, the teaching or the nursing or what have you, or some people work in fitness and that type of stuff. I didn't really realize that there were opportunities for people in the hairdressing profession to go over and work and live there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a bit, obviously beauty in general over here. Hair, beauty, anything in that kind of industry is so massive over here. But Irish hairdressers and UK hairdressers tend to have quite good training behind them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely a massive, massive market for them over here.
Wow, fascinating.
Thank God.
Okay, and do you have a mixture of sort of, you know, the indigenous population clients and sort of English, Irish, Scottish, Welsh, etc., or is it a mix, or what's the story?
In the salon I'm currently in, it's actually an Irish-owned salon, so we do actually get a lot of Irish clients, but we still get a great mix, you know. It's so multicultural here. I mean, you would see in your chair every day, there could be someone from any nationality, you know. So it's certainly not... it's not just Irish, but yeah, it's a good mix, I would say, for sure.
And without digging into your personal information, which I certainly wouldn't, is the benefit as a hairdresser working over there mostly lifestyle, or you're better looked after, or a mix?
I would say a good mix, yeah. The lifestyle's fab, obviously. You still get a couple of days off a week, and obviously the weather is a big pull, you know. But in terms of the salary and stuff, yeah, I would say that it's definitely a great salary to be on, and as much as you can be out here, you know. So, yeah, it's really good, yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, well, continue to enjoy it, Florentina. It's been lovely speaking to you. Obviously, the rain's gone now, 26 degrees. You'll be okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
Take care. That's Florentina Muldani speaking to us from Dubai. They had a year and a half worth of rainfall fall in less than 24 hours. Mixed reports, some saying, you know, this is part of climate change and an extreme weather phenomena in the area. Others talking of cloud seeding, which goes on over there as well, which... often happens to cool down the summers and control climate change as well, in a way. All right, back with more after these. In fact, what we'll be talking about is the announcement that the North West Simon community is to cease operations. The charity is set to go into receivership in the coming weeks. Very interested if you have any views on that to 0866 25000 or call us on 0749 125000. Now, it was announced yesterday that the North West Simon community has made the difficult decision to wind up operations. This has been put down to an inability to secure increased funding. The charity will go into receivership in the coming weeks. Now, I didn't know, but it is the case that independent TD Thomas Pringle is board chairperson of the North West Simon community. Sad news, Thomas, obviously.
Yes, it is, Greg, and it's very, very disappointing that the board of the Simon community have to make this decision. But unfortunately, we have been trying for the last number of years to secure additional funding through the Department of the Environment and the Northwest Homeless Forum. And we have been unable to do that. And for the last couple of years, we have been working on our reserves to maintain services. And while we were trying to see if we could secure any additional funding, and unfortunately, it comes to a stage where we had to make a decision that we had to fold up because it wouldn't be right to run the whole system down and just to go in a disorderly fashion. So that's why we had to take this decision.
Is this a fait accompli now, Thomas, or is it possible that the powers that be or those that hold the purse strings might say, look, we can't allow this to happen? I don't see much in terms of, you know, anyone looking for someone to come in and save the day here. Is it done and dusted?
Well, I think it's gone beyond that now at this stage, unfortunately, Greg, and the powers that be that could have supported the North West Simon community and the homeless people in the North West to actually maintain services are aware and have been fully aware of what is happening in relation to the North West Simon community and have been aware for the last number of years. And if anything could have been done to save the Simon community, the times I do that would have been up until about 2 weeks ago. And but unfortunately, we can't afford to wait any longer and to continue on with the services that we have. We have to try and do this in an orderly fashion and to close up our services in an orderly way rather than letting it go any further.
What does that mean in terms of services? Do you help people, like say, for instance, in 2022, the North West Simon community provided support and or accommodation to households comprising 122 adults and 50 children in Donegal. Is that a short-term intervention, a long-term intervention? I'm just, for the benefit of the listeners and myself to an extent, just curious as to the work that has been done since 2005. And does this mean that you have to tell those that you've worked with, right, the assistance we've been providing you with is no longer available? So just talk to me a little bit about that, the workings. Yeah.
Well, there is in Letterkenny, the North West Simon community would have 19 properties, flats, with one and two bedroom flats that have tenants in them at the moment. And those will be protected and the tenancies will continue on regardless of what voluntary housing body is actually in charge of those properties. So we have been having discussions with a couple of different voluntary housing bodies over the last month or two to see if any of them will be in a position to take over those properties. So in terms of those tenants, there will be no change. Over the next few weeks, it might change who the company or the voluntary housing body that they pay the rent to, but their tenancies will not change, and that's vitally important that those people be aware of that. The people that really are going to be left behind in relation to this is the people who have been having difficulty in terms of maybe sustaining a private tenancy and stuff like that there that our staff have been working with across the Northwest and quite a lot of people in relation to that. And it's around maybe helping people to deal with landlords and know their rights and helping people with budgeting and stuff like that there to be able to maintain their property. And that's been a very important part of the North West Simon community's work. And I think it is a very worthwhile part, but unfortunately, it's not a part that the government recognises because the government doesn't recognise people as becoming homeless until they end up in a homeless shelter. And at that stage, I think it's too late, and the government should be looking at homeless prevention and looking at to keep people in their homes that they're in at the minute, and by assisting people that can be achieved. And it's a great tribute to the work of the staff that have worked to make sure that people have that system in place and available to them.
In 2022, the Board of Directors took the decision to utilise its reserves to maintain services at existing levels while campaigning for increased funding. Was that a mistake? Was that in hindsight, we're here now 2 years later and the services are being totally wound up. Was there a mistake made in 2022?
I don't think so. I think what we had to do was try and maintain services, because unfortunately, when the North West Simon community goes, I don't know what's going to happen to those people that are getting assistance now. And and if we had wound up at that stage, we would have been basically they would have been in the same stage 2 years earlier. It probably, in terms of the North West Simon community, might have been easier, but we wanted to give it as much as of a chance as possible as we could to secure additional funding. We've worked over the last 2 years constantly to try and impress on the government and that the need that is here, and that additional services and additional funding is required to make sure that can be maintained. But unfortunately, it has fallen on deaf ears this time. So we took the decision that we had no choice, but we had to wind up our services, because we couldn't go on any longer waiting for government to recognise the work that we were doing.
What was for last year, for an example, the loss or shortfall in funding between the services that you to provide at the level that would be expected versus the amount of money available to do that?
Well, we have been using our own funds that we have built up over the years to maintain services, so there has been a reduction in actual services provided. But in terms of funding-wise, the average, we've received around about 15-16% of government funding for the services, and most other voluntary housing bodies in the country would be receiving probably about 70% funding for their services. So we haven't been receiving that support from the government, which has been a real problem. Mm-hmm. And we've had valiant efforts at fundraising across the Northwest, and fundraising has been really important part of the work that we've been doing. But it's not possible for the fundraising to make up the difference, and that's why we had to make this decision.
Now, of course, we're seeking comment from the government in relation to this, well, the those within it responsible. And I'm not asking you to do the work of their spokesperson, who may not be available, but have they told you or offered any explanation as to why there is such a difference between the funding the North West Simon community receives from government to cover its costs versus other housing bodies?
No, they haven't told us anything, and that's what we met with the department and the minister in July, and 2 years ago. It'll be 2 years this July, and we've had constant contact. And I am aware that Micheál Martin, Leo Varadkar, of all have been aware of and pressed on them in relation to the services. And I must say that all the politicians in the North West, and Sligo, Leitrim, and Donegal, have been supportive and have been pushing to try and get this recognised, but it has fallen on deaf ears, and the minister has had no interest.
This is going to be framed by some as following, and it has sort of to some extent already in texts, and I get it. I couldn't counter argue it. You know, quite rightly, we are spending billions on housing for different people with different backgrounds, and many people believe that that's good, others believe we shouldn't, but be that as it may, I presume that the money we're talking about to support an organisation that helps people struggling for housing in the North West, we're talking pittance compared to the overall spend to meet our responsibilities in terms of IPAS centres, migrants. I'm very careful here not to be pitching one group of individuals with another, but I also have to recognise the fact that people will say, with all this money being chucked about, why couldn't some more resources be put towards the likes of the North West Simon community to continue to offer housing supports for the people of the North West, which I presume is a mix of, you know, people as well. But, I mean, you can understand how someone might say that.
No, I can't actually, because that's actually not true. And the reality is that this situation was developing and was happening before any refugees.
No, I'm not blaming. No,
Greg, I want to make this very clear.
I'll come back to you.
I think it is very important that it should be very clear, because the problem here is not that refugees and asylum seekers have come to Ireland in relation to this. The problem is that the government does not have support for the homeless in our society right across the board.
No, of course.
It's not a question of
it's not either or.
Refugees funded and our own people not being funded.
Well, it
that
is.
It's not, Greg. No.
Well, the government has not run out of money.
Not.
No, you see, this maybe you're not understanding the point that listeners are making. And I said it, we are rightly meeting our obligations to support refugees and international protection applicants, okay? But we haven't spent all of the money on that. We could still do that, the government could still do that, and also recognise the important work that the likes of the Northwest Syming community does, and financially support it to support another group of individuals that deserve a roof over their heads.
Yeah, the reality is, Greg, that this government will be putting 20 billion euros a year aside into a rainy day, so-called rainy day fund, for the next 3 or 4 years, and that, you know, we're in terms of the Northwest Syming, you're looking probably in the region of about 70,000 or 80,000 euros a year would have meant that we would continue on our services, but that's the reality of the situation. And the government does not have the commitment to the homeless people in our society to provide the money for those services. And there is any amount of money available that could provide those services, but the government is choosing not to.
Yeah, exactly. That's what the listeners that have texted have said.
Yeah, but to conflate that with the way that the refugees and asylum seekers are being treated,
it's
not actually the case.
Yeah, I know that it's not conflation, Thomas, but we can't. Like, I get exactly where you're coming from and your ethos and where you are, and I respect that, right? But the problem is we can't also ignore what an instinctive feeling that people have, you know, because I don't think that benefits anyone either. This is not an opportunity to have a go at refugees or IPASS applicants or anything like that there. But this is what some would say is a mishandling of the situation. This is what creates bad feeling, right? Because we do have a lot of resources and we are spending them. And the majority of people, I think, or a great deal of people think that's right. But we can't come up with 80,000 people to support the likes of the Northwest community, Syming community, which is dealing with people of all different backgrounds and nationalities as well, right? But you can understand how that's that emotional reaction. And people tend then not to take that out on the people that make the decision. They take that out then on people that have just arrived into the community. And I think ignoring that reality is not helpful, but I respect if you see it as a conflation.
I'm not ignoring the reality.
No, if you see that as a conflation, I respect that. But unfortunately, I do believe that that is the emotions that will be triggered out there. And I think in terms of messaging and what the government could do, any government, be it this or the next, there's a lot you could do to also assist in quelling some of this bad feeling that's there. Anyway, that's what I'm saying, and I agree. You know, I fully respect your view, like I do anyone that's come on this program. But I wanted to get that out there because that's going to be the elephant in the room, probably with texts coming in a little later. If you understand where I'm coming from, Thomas, I'm just trying to be fair and give everyone a platform.
That, Greg,
and respect,
you know, and there will be some people that will try and conflate the two things and say that if we weren't looking after, if
no,
looking
that's
after
not what the listeners. No,
we could be looking after our own.
No, that's people. Not what listeners. To this, I don't know what it's like in other radio stations. That's not really what it's like from our listeners. That generally speaking, they say that, look, at if we're doing what we're doing, but also we should be doing, not that we should not be doing that
We definitely should be doing more, and that is the reality. And unfortunately, that's the decision that this government has made, not to do more and not to support our own homeless people. And as it's been government policy for the last probably 15, 20 years to run down the professional services for people that require housing, whether they're homeless or whether they're housing applicants as well. And that has been government policy, and that's unfortunately how it has, that's the outworking of it now.
All right, it's sad news. Are there many people working within the Northwest Syming community affected by this as well? Are jobs being lost or transferred, or what's the situation?
There are seven jobs at the moment that work with Northwest Syming. hopefully, if another voluntary housing body takes over the properties, some of those jobs may be saved. But at the minute, those seven people are losing their jobs as well.
All right, OK. Feel for them as well. That's seven families, yeah, probably. OK, thanks very much indeed. That's Independent Deputy Thomas Pringle, who is the board chairperson of the Northwest Simon Community. And I don't want to be argumentative, but also, I it's very important that people who have a certain opinion, and it's not a hateful opinion, that they're heard as well. So sorry to sort of persist in that regard. Okay, thank you for all of your messages coming in so far this morning. It's very useful. Bloody disgrace, says a listener. Vital services closed, but government continue to dish out money right, left and centre. Bring on a general election, says a listener there. Cars or roads don't cause collisions. People cause collisions. Well, unfortunately, the condition of a car contributes to collisions. This is just an absolute statement of fact. And road conditions, ditches that aren't cleaned, potholes that aren't filled, surfaces that are losing traction, to say that they don't contribute to collisions would be just completely farcical. And I'm sorry to sort of contradict you so bluntly, but those are two factors as well. The roads in this county are not fit for purpose. If the roads were a business, we would be shut down by health and safety. Full of potholes, they should be shut down and fixed. Greg, a family member was caught drink driving a good few years ago, now lost the license for 3.5 years. But he never stopped driving. Could never understand this till now when Michael Harrison said about license number. All I can say is that this person hasn't learned their lesson. They still drink driving. I'm just afraid they'll hurt someone or worse, kill someone with their selfish act. More needs to be done. Let me see. There's a couple of things I want to mention as well, but I want to make sure I'm up to date with the commercial breaks. We'll be back in moments. This year, the parish of Murlough have plans to mark the 60th anniversary of the consecration of St. Patrick's Church and 50 years since the Clonleigh Parish became an independent parish in the Derry Diocese. Father Colm O'Doherty is parish priest at St. Patrick's Church in Murlough, and he joins me now. Father, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I am doing fantastic and really lovely to have you on the programme. So,
thank you very much.
I suppose this is an anniversary, 60th anniversary of the consecration of St. Patrick's Church, but at least part of its history going far beyond that remains. Are we going back to the 1700s, Father?
We are indeed, because actually there's three churches have been on this site. Ours is the third church now. But the first church goes right back to 1760. And and at that time, it was still, the penal laws were still very much in Ireland at the time. But the Earl of Fermanagh, I think it was, or Enniskillen, the Earl of Fermanagh, he gave us the land to have a church. And then it was replaced then back it was 1828. And then after that, then the present church then was built it was opened in 1964. So that's the connection. And there's still the tower, there's still a picture of the tower there. And it's in the grounds, lovely actually, the old tower connecting the other two churches. So you see the connection going right back to the earliest days, yeah.
And did the earlier two churches just fall into dereliction, or were they destroyed, or what do we know of their history?
Oh, they weren't. No, but basically what happened was that as more and more people became, just the crowds got bigger and the churches were no longer able to cope. But the one that was replaced in 1828, that church then was replaced with the 64 church. It just got too small. That's really as what happened for the numbers of people who were attending church at that time. Yeah.
The tower from the first construction, sorry, I'm fascinated by this because it's been around so long. It stands independently, Father, does it?
So as it stands really as a landmark, on the when you drive past the church grounds, you see the new church there with its tower, but the old tower is up in the car park, and it's really a lovely feature, very, very nice feature indeed, yeah. And actually, believe it or not, as soon as the old church was opened, they knocked down the new church was open. They knocked down the old church, which was a pity, really. You know, it could have been, maybe with hindsight, you could have done more with it. But anyway, the tower was kept. Yeah.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we make those decisions in history. One can look at the rail network, for an example. It probably just seems like a good idea at the time, and then as time passes, we can reflect a little more on it. So the church that was, it was opened in 1964.
That's correct, yes.
How long was the process of planning and building and funding? How long does that, I suppose it's not a typical answer, but in your case, how long did that take?
Well, from what I've been reading, the architect was a man called Liam McCormick, who is very famous throughout Donegal, and is the famous seven churches of Liam McCormick. But Liam McCormick, the work was starting back in about 1958. So that's when the planning started. And there was a very, very enthusiastic parish priest here, Father McFeely, who became Bishop of Raphoe later on. But he was really the driving force behind looking towards getting a new church. So that's how far back it went, yeah.
£80,000.
You wouldn't get much for that now.
You wouldn't, no. My word. The significance of St. Patrick's Church, sorry, not that part of it, but 50 years since the Clonlea Parish became an independent parish in the Derry Diocese. Yeah. What does that mean, or what's the significance of that, Father?
Right. In 1974, we had a new bishop in the Diocese of Derry, and I'm in the Diocese of Derry. So our new bishop was Bishop Edward Daly. And he had a series of, you know, the clerical changes were made, and always his first set of clerical changes were made in 1974. But also he needed to reorder the parishes around the diocese. And one of the parishes that was reordered was ourselves, because our parish has got the name of Clonlea, but we were actually part of the parish of Strabane, which is known as Camas. Mm-hmm. And so it was parish of Camas. The parish priest lived over there, and the curates kind of lived around the parish here in Clonlea. So that's the significance, was that separation, 1974. So the parish then became an independent parish and grew from there.
Okay,
yeah.
Brilliant stuff. Right now, there is quite an extensive timetable of events covering the course of the year, because if it's a one-year celebration, and it kicks off on the 5th of May. Bishop McKeown is going to visit to celebrate Mass on the 60th anniversary of the opening of the church. That's a significant part of the programme of events.
Very much so, particularly when you consider that we are now in a time of thinking about the future, and it's lovely to have the Bishop of the Diocese come and acknowledge the 60 years of this church building. Beautiful, it is actually a beautiful building, and it's inside some wonderful artwork that really it's worth, you know, even if people are just passing by, they call in and see it, it's beautiful. So it's significant in the sense of going forward, as we've heard of this great word, synodality, has been coming down the line from Rome and other places. And part of it is going to be the reordering of parishes, parish boundaries again. And so that's why I'm so glad that we're still able to celebrate as the parish of Clonlea, celebrate the bishop coming for the Mass for that church.
Because for all we know, we could actually be in a window of history.
We could, very much so.
Exactly,
I think
it's
important. That's why we are trying to do our best to make sure that this year is a year that we acknowledge 1964. And it's very important. Yeah,
The 24th of June, there's a special Mass of anointing of the sick. On the 31st of July, the Family of Families Jubilee Year Fun Day and barbecue takes place. You have to have I mean, I'm not saying, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying the first two events, you know, aren't enjoyable, but a fun day and barbecue does sound particularly attractive in the middle of summer as well, Father.
Well, please God will get us summer, first of all, Greg. Yes. And secondly, then, yes, I think it's important that we acknowledge that a parish is made up of families, and it's a community of families, and that's right why I would like that community of families to get an opportunity to come together, have a chat, bit of fun, children get a bit to play and so forth. So that's why it's good to be able to come and bring them all together.
Yes, yeah. And the 25th of August marks that important milestone, as you say, when it became independent of the parish of Camas, visit of Archbishop Eamon Martin of Armagh, Primate of All-Ireland, on the 25th of August. And the 15th of December, a special Christmas concert featuring Queen's University Concert Choir and Orchestra, local schools and special guests. That sounds like...
Yes, we're sort of finishing off the Jubilee year, coming up to Christmas, that's time of new birth, thinking about the Christ child being born. So we may as well finish with a good celebration.
I'll say it might be more difficult to get a ticket to that than the All-Ireland final.
listen, I know. But listen, Greg, if you speak nicely, I'll get you a ticket or two.
Okay, thank you, Father. Okay, well, listen, it's going to be a lovely year. And any influence you can exercise about the weather, Father, would be greatly appreciated, though I do understand it might be even beyond your gift. But God... God loves a trier, isn't that what the saying is?
That's it. Yes, okay. Yes, he does.
Thank you very much. It's been lovely speaking to you, and congratulations on the two important milestones, and I hope the year goes off as well as it looks on paper.
Thanks very much, Greg, and I thank all your listeners as well. Thank you.
It's been lovely speaking to you, Father. Thank you. Father Colm O'Doherty, parish priest at St. Patrick's Church in Murlough, 086 60 25,000, in the church. In a community, it's you know, and I'm thinking myself of my situation, church chapels, whichever it might be, or other places of prayer, you know, between marriages and christenings and confirmations and communions and funerals and all manner of things. There are so many memories are stored there, so to speak, are responsible. Those buildings are so responsible for it. Right, a vintage car run is taking place. Well, it's Kildare Car Club are running it. It's on the 5th of May at 11 a.m. It's €10 or £10 per car, and the vintage car run starts at the halfway house through Buncrana, Mamore Gap, Clonmany, past Ballyliffin Hotel, Carndonagh, North Pole, and then back to Buncrana. It's raising funds in aid of Action Mental Health. Tea, coffee and sandwiches afterwards. So if you want to give your car a run or go out and see wonderful cars, the Vintage Car Run, Kildare Car Club. For more information, we have some numbers here which we can pass on. There's no point in me reading them out here. But if you fancy getting your car out for that, it's on the 5th of May, 11 a.m. And to support Action Mental Health, stick that one in your diary or contact us and we'll pass on some numbers for you.